Welcome to the Jasmine Star Show. I am very excited to bring in a guest who I've waited. We've gone back and forth. I mean, like this girl, I feel like I could probably get Oprah on this show sooner than I could get Cody Sanchez. But let me tell y'all, she is worth the stinking wait. She is founder of Contrarian Thinking. This is going to be a newsletter, a media company, and it's read by hundreds of thousands of people. And she's all about critically thinking. She has over 25 boring businesses. We're going to get to that in a second. But y'all know that on the podcast, I bring on people who I have had a personal interaction with. So let's rewind a tiny bit. So a few months ago, I was invited to a mastermind and I'm sitting in this mastermind. It's in Los Angeles and I actually have no idea who's speaking. And I'm sitting because what I do is I'm actually a nerd, but I choose the second row so that my full-fledged nerd is not out like waving my crazy flag. And so then this woman approaches the stage and I'm blown away by her presentation. I'm blown away by the fact that she is an ardent lover of boring businesses. She gets into tactical stuff. We're talking about creating content and she wears these really cool boots. And I'm like, who is this person? She's basically a walking unicorn with long hair. And then, as if that wasn't enough, she talks about creating millions and she has a fund and she helps other people do the same. And then if that is not enough, there is another woman who takes the stage by the name of Layla Hormozi. And there's this Q&A. And you would think that the thing I was most inspired and blown away by was Cody's presentation and her vast amount of knowledge and her press and all this fancy stuff. But the thing that I was like, oh my God, this person is next level, is Layla Hormozi takes the stage and she is a very well-known CEO of a company that has over $100 million and she's, I think, barely 30. And the vast majority of the questions that were asked in probably the first 12 to 15 minutes were all about, I'm no lie, in a room predominantly comprised of 90% men, was how she met and dated her husband and business partner and what it was like to be a partner, like a wife to somebody who was so successful. And then I hear, because remember, I'm second row, somebody in the far back who somebody says, yes, your question. She's like, can we talk to Layla about running a $100 million company and like what she does is for CEO strategies? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Cody Sanchez, who spits it as she sees it. I am so happy you're here, Cody.
Oh, that's so funny. I remember exactly what you're talking about because I was really just trying to hold my mouth or my tongue there for a moment, but I was dying because Layla's a friend of mine and I know yours too. And I think it's a pet peeve of hers to get asked all the time about dating Alex when she runs the show. And so anyway, yeah, when I was listening to that, I was like, dear Lord in heaven, why are we asking her about something so unrepeatable? But I didn't know anybody else noticed. I thought it was just me being
not at all. It actually, what it did was it gave me an unknowing that I didn't need. I didn't know that I needed permission for me to step up and not just say like, let's change the scope of this conversation, but like, hey, let's carve out a new path for the way that we speak to female leaders in business organizations. But that was the first interaction I had with you. And then later, as I'm exiting the event, you happen to be sitting in the lobby and I introduced myself and I invited you on the podcast and I really wanted to go. And I started following all of your content. And one of the things that I'm really inspired by, and we're going to get into what it is and who you are, but the thing that like kind of sets you apart in my mind from the stuff that I've been consuming lately is your whole mindset. Like what it means, like, and you shared a post on your Instagram where you talked about three mindset shifts that changed everything for you. And I'm going to summarize them and then we can kind of like dive into them. Your first mindset shift was saying yes to change. Your second mindset shift was saying yes to hard things. And your third mindset shift was admitting what you didn't know. Okay, so what was so powerful about shifting your mindset to embrace change, embrace hard things, and admit what you didn't know?
Well, I started in this game kind of young, similar to you. And so I thought I knew most things and thus I was unable to change. And thus why would I have to do hard things? Because I already know what I need to know. And it's much easier to pretend like you know everything than it is to pretend that you know nothing. It's a real blow to the ego. And when I was in private equity for a long time, there's this perverse mentality that we have in private equity that asking questions and showing that you do not know something is a sign of weaker intellect. And I noticed this because, you know, I was sort of protecting my ego, like, oh yeah, of course, like that's what the EBITDA numbers are. And, you know, this, because I was mimicking what I saw people on high do. And after a while, I met with one of my mentors who I'd met back in the day in journalism. Her name's Nellie Galan. And she was like, questions are your biggest answer. Why would you ever stop asking them? And, you know, you don't need the answers to questions. You just need to know the right question to ask and who to ask it to. And that's when I realized it does not serve me to have this stuck mindset. And I think I had that for many, many years.
How do you know the right question? Like there's people who are listening who are like, I don't even know what the right question is.
Well, the nice part is you don't have to have just one, but you have to start with one. And so when I ask questions, typically the first questions that I ask when I'm trying to invest or do a deal or take a job aren't the right one. It's like to get the juices flowing, you know, the first time you do a squat, your first squat is wobbly, it feels awful, you know, whatever. And then you get into a few of them, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm kind of getting this. It's the same with questions. So I typically feel like questions are a funnel, just like a sales funnel is, right? So at the top, you want to start really, really broad. And because you don't really know where you're trying to go yet. So it's like, if I get a deal on across my desk, and I'm looking at the deal, I start with really broad questions. What do you want for this business? Like, how much money do you want for this business? Why are you selling? You know, why did you start this business? What is this business? Really, almost they're like, what is this business? It's a construction business. What do you mean? But I like to hear them start really wide until we narrow it all the way down, which is like, oh, wait a second. Your churn is 10% over, you know, month over month, or you lose this many customers each month. So by the end of the year, all your customers churn out. That's the question, but I only know it by starting really, really wide.
Mm. So giving your, what I hear is giving yourself the permission to ask a very broad question without knowing, oh, this is the right question. Like you only know the right question after you've asked a series of questions.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we're programmed incorrectly in school. It's like, good question, Sally. You know, it's like, no, just great for asking a question, Sally. Mm. And then you can get into more of the good questions later.
Okay. So people look at you from the outside, young and really well-spoken. And it seems like you have lived, I don't know, 87 lifetimes in the time that most people are.
Same,
and
girl. Like,
So when people look at this, and we're going to get into what it is you do. But before we do that, like, what's the nutshell version? Like, we're on an elevator. We got five floors. I'm like, hey, Cody, what do you do? And how did you get here? What is that response so that we can contextualize how a listener is going to take action based on what you've done and then improve their life thereafter?
I buy boring businesses and now I talk about it on the internet. And that's usually exactly what I say. And then people go, what is a boring business? And they go, what do you mean you talk about it on the internet? And we scroll down from there. But that's really what I do for a living. And the way that I got there is the traditional path, you know, like, oh, I actually read this great quote and I've got to go back and look at where it's from. But it talked about a study that was done in England where most people thought that you had linear career paths. So I become an attorney by going to law school, by working at multiple law firms to eventually become a partner in a legal firm. Okay, that's what we think it looks like. In actuality, they did a study. Oh, it's a book called Range. In actuality, they did a study of top performers cross industry. It was a multi-year study done really well. And what they found is that most top performers are more like a ping pong table, back and forth and right and left and all over the place until they finally get to a destination they didn't even realize. And mine was the same. I started in finance very traditionally, climbed a ladder for multiple years. But before that, I was a human trafficking journalist, you know, and before that, I was involved in political campaigns. And before that, I sold wallpaper for one of my first jobs, you know, and now I'm on the internet making TikToks. So like, who the fuck knows, basically?
Okay, but what, you just like totally diminishing, and now I'm making TikToks. Actually, you're not. We're going to get into the actual business model of what it is you do. But quite honestly, that is what Cody does. She takes boring businesses, think of like a laundromat. And I think at the time of this recording, you're going through the process of buying a property management company. Nobody wakes up and is like, you know what I need today? I need a coin op. You know, it's just like, but Cody's like, this is where it is. And then you teach other people how to do this. So also in a recent Instagram post, you were obsessed with boring businesses. Now I want to talk about, when did you become obsessed with this idea of a boring business? Because there are people who think thoughts and they don't think that they can turn it into an empire. How have you done? So what happened there?
Yeah. Well, I think a good example is the property management company. So I get frustrated because for a living now, you know, I talk to people and I do deals, and I get frustrated when people think that they can't do deals or they can't become an owner or they can't get equity in a company. And I try to trace the root all the way back to their no. Like, why do they think that? And so I was like, all right, well, I need to do a challenge myself to see if I remember what it takes for me to do every single stage of buying a business from the beginning. Now I have a team and to do it in an industry that I haven't done before with an area that I don't have expertise, how could I do it? And so I basically said, all right, 60 days to buy a property management company that's profitable today. And I think can get to $1 million by the end of the year in revenue, not profit. And I want to do it with zero to little money down, basically. And so I started this challenge because I wanted to share with people my exact steps. So I'm documenting from day one to now, I think we're on day 21, all steps of this process.
Okay, I'm going to pause here because there's a lot going on and I want to repeat back what it is. Cody says, hey, people say X. Cody says, I'm going to go back and show you how it's done with everything that you have, which is little to no money. I want to build a $1 million business, and I'm going to document my process. She's putting her name and her credibility, her belief system, and her approach on the line, showing everybody what she's doing. Okay, next.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, the idea was, I want to try to explain step by step how to get there. I mean, I think it's a crazy goal to do this inside 60 days. I usually don't put limits on myself, but it's like, people are going to say, well, you have a platform, you have a bunch of money. So I have to try to remove the objections to show them that they can still do it. Yep. And so that to me is a really good example of sort of how I think about life in general. I was working with a private equity firm. I was a partner at a firm. We did a bunch of big deals, and I made one of the senior partners, you know, a middle-aged white guy, a ton of money. And I like white guys in general, and I like money. So it's all good. But I was like, wait a second, I did all the work on this. And now, you know, you get to make $100 million off of this deal, and I get to take home X, which was definitely not $100 million. And then I realized, why couldn't I do a slightly smaller deal, same structure, and cash flow off of it like this guy is, but I don't have to have a whole team. And that's what started me on this obsession with boring businesses, because I'm not smart enough, or it's not my core competency to start the next Tesla or Facebook or whatever. But I do know that I could buy a laundromat, or I could buy a construction company, and I could figure that out. And so that's where the obsession with boring businesses started.
Okay, so I want to pause here, and there's two veins that I want to tap on. Number one, what Cody is doing is what any business owner can, and I'm going to venture to say, should do. If you're a yoga instructor and you want to get into a handstand, do the challenge with yourself and invite people, and then you document the process of going into a handstand. If you're a chef and you're working on a souffle, go through a 30-day process of perfecting the souffle, document the process, and show people. You build credibility and trust by way of that, and then you show what is possible in the exact same scenario. That's part one. So you're a business owner, content creation, literally documenting exactly what you're already doing and challenging yourself and others to join that. But the second part that I'm interested in here is, as a business owner, what you're hearing her say and do is something that we as listeners, because I'm telling you, I'm watching from a distance and I'm like, do I have it in me to buy a laundromat? Can I buy a car wash? Like, what are other unsexy businesses? Now, here's one thing that I look back and I'm like, biggest regret is, early in my career, I had service-based businesses where I'd get a pretty flush with cash. What I should have done in those times is think about diversifying investments in things that were entirely different than what I was known for. I don't regret it. I just look back and I'm like, if I could do it again, I probably would have diversified much earlier. So if you're a business owner, wherever you are in your career, and you're listening to this, this is an opportunity to listen carefully to what Cody's doing and what has done. So we went from, I helped somebody make $100 million. And then you asked yourself, could I do something like that similar on a smaller scale? To which the answer we now know is hell yes. And then after you got your first business, what was that?
Well, my very first business was actually a website that was called Selling South. So I bought a little website, and I did two other internet businesses, one called Threads Refined and the other one, I can't recall the name, before I eventually bought a laundromat. That laundromat is the one I talk about the most because it's the most repeatable.
Very cool. So we'll use that. We'll just use that as the anchor. You buy a laundromat. And then at what point do you start realizing that this is going to be an extension of your personal brand and you start creating content? Because this is what I'm saying on the outside and from research that I've done. From the outside, it looks like not only are you buying these boring businesses, you actually have a lot of free content and information to teach people on how to do it on their own. And then you have a mastermind, a group of people who get closer access to you and coaches so that they're then empowered to go and find their own deals and get a little bit more navigation and process through that. And then, this is a question mark for me, do you also have a fund that people can invest in and that you invest their money into other boring businesses? So there's like, you do the dirty work and then I'll just take a smaller margin?
So we don't have that private equity fund that's public. We have a small group of partners that I've done a series of deals with. We have a public, but it's not open at the moment, venture capital fund that invests in technology that builds the infrastructure of boring businesses. So think the software that powers car washes, you know, the software that powers lending to small businesses. We have those kind of holdings. So maybe one day I do a fund, but I've been doing funds, Jasmine, for like 15 years or something. And so at some point I was just like, I don't want anybody to tell me what to do anymore. I want to buy whatever I want, whenever I want to.
Okay. So like, let's get into the business of this. You're making your money and finding your passion with these boring businesses and you're a renegade. You're a contrarian. You're doing your own thing. And then the mastermind, you're finding a lot more purpose in helping other people do that. Is this where you want to be for how long? Like, is this it? How does this then work?
That's a good question. I don't know if I would ever say I'm very good at doing anything for like 20 years. I've always wished that I had that personality. That's why I'm a portfolio aggregator. I buy lots of businesses as opposed to one business that I run for 30 years. I think those are two different people, a starter and a maintainer. I'm a starter. Mm-hmm. And so I anticipate that I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now. I've been doing it for 2 years now. We pulled back a lot on raising funds because I am having more fun doing this at the moment, but I can't anticipate doing anything forever. What I would say is that I can't imagine I ever don't do deals. It's my favorite thing to do. So like just finding that business, executing on it. It's also very lucrative. So I imagine I'll always do that, but I'll start playing bigger and bigger games and fewer of them. Because as you know, creativity takes a lot of space too. So for me to think about how do I want to write this newsletter? And I have a book coming out this year. So what do I want that to be in there? Means that I can't spend 72 hours in Excel spreadsheets like I used to for sure.
Okay. So now that we've seen like the big picture, let's reverse engineer, because on in a recent Instagram post, you talked about the 7 things you wish you knew before you started a business. And we're going to link to all the posts that I'm mentioning in the show notes, but this is a quote: boring doesn't have to be ugly. You mentioned that boring things it takes time to make them beautiful. Can you walk us through an example of a business that you did this? Like, you know, somebody's listening to this, like, I'm not, okay, okay, good, good, good.
Totally. I got one right away. By the way, you're really a great interviewer. I'm sure like your audience can learn a lot from that, but just even sometimes I'll come on a podcast and they'll quote me and I'm like, oh God, please tell me what the hook is of that, because we put out so much content every day. You're like, yes, that was important, but I don't remember the line. Okay.
No. You know? I got you, girl. I got you. Say you.
So good. It's great. We have this company we bought called approachment.com. And I actually need to, I'll tweet out after this, or I'll Instagram story a picture of what the Approachment old website used to look like. I mean, it's hysterical. It almost looks like a mix between like an Asian nail spa and like maybe a call center. I don't know. It's super bad.
Okay.
And anyway, what it is it's a DM AI enabled service that allows small businesses to text back and forth. So like, basically you're like, I need a handyman, and handymans are all closed. And so after hours, or you have to call the handyman. I'm like, no, I just want somebody to be able to text right away and get an answer about, can I get a handyman to come to my house tomorrow at 5? Yeah, you can text. I don't want to talk to anybody. Bye. So that's what the service does. So we started from this like horrific website to a really good looking website. It probably took, I mean, Jasmine, maybe like 10 hours and $2,000. They originally had a 1-800 number as the only way to communicate. There was no email that you could email responses. They were a text service and they didn't offer their own service to the people who came to the website. Mm. They didn't have Google reviews. We still don't have social media, so we need to remedy that. The financials were all done in Excel spreadsheet. They didn't even use QuickBooks. So like, it was just dirty. And that was a really easy, quick fix. And then, you know, there's been a lot of businesses, like our first laundromat, oh my Lanta, it was broken machines everywhere. Those dingy light bulbs that kind of like flicker like a horror movie, you know, and really old yellow paint. And so again, it's not a huge upgrade to the business. It's not like we're putting, you know, satin on the walls, but a little bit of better lighting, a deep clean, new paint and better equipment. And you service the community in a way that gives some respect.
So do you find now that your brand has been extended that the deals are coming to you? Like when you were talking about that tech-based company, did you go and search for them? How did that come to fruition?
The best thing I've ever did was get online. And I fought it, because I remember I was working at State Street, a really large asset management group. And I started having a little tiny blog that nobody read. But my boss came across it, and I was a pretty senior person at this time. And he was like, you know, your predictions on there about what was happening in Latin American investments at the time could move the market. So you can't have that blog. So you need to pick between the two. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm making a lot of money over here. It's a no-brainer. Of course I'm going to stay here. Now in retrospect, maybe not. And I've had multiple instances in finance, because we have all these licenses and regulations upon us where we are literally legally not allowed to talk about many things when we're licensed.
So there's a couple of things that are coming in at play. And she talked about the tension between creating content. And in her mind, there was a thing she wanted to do, and there was a thing that she was doing. And then she used content as gasoline on a fire that had already existed. So what we need to make sure that we're hearing as business owners is that the content became the linchpin so that people are showing up hand in hand to say, help me. And so it's like, if you're looking at like, hey, I have a great service, I love what I do, and I want a greater flow, content has become on that. Just yesterday, I saw you post on Instagram stories, a this or that between two YouTube thumbnails, and it was about a cleaning business. How much are you getting insights from one platform and applying it to another?
Thumbnails, we've realized, are just so important for YouTube, the title and the thumbnail. And I really don't like to operate from that place. I'm like, I want to do this video, and because of that, I will do this video. And the right way, I think the better way to do YouTube is to have your title first and probably a really good idea of what your thumbnail is going to look like.
I know. Dang it.
And then work it into that. Yeah. No. It's tough. But, you know, I think it's a balance too, because you have to decide also as a creator, what do you really want to do? Is everything just for mass virality, or do you also want to have an authentic voice? I'm sure, you know, Casey Neistat back in the day didn't go as viral right away because he didn't have clickbait titles. He didn't have clickbait images. And so you kind of decide. But what I have found is that there's hardly ever a situation in which there isn't an overwhelming winner in a category on a different platform. And so for me, I'm like, I kind of like both. I can't really decide. And then you put it on Instagram, you're like, what? 75% like this one over this one? Wild. I guess we'll go with that.
Hmm. And so as listeners are listening, you might not have a business that buys boring businesses or has a mastermind that facilitates people who does. But what I want to peel back and say is like, here is a person who ping-ponged her way through success to end up where she is. And so if you find yourself ping-ponging, trust that it's part of the process. And then she's creating content not to sustain the business, she's creating content to grow the business. And so I want to talk a little bit about content in your content creation and what that actually looks like. Because when I heard you speak, you were talking about the teams that you have and like the strategy behind it. Can you talk a little bit about what it looks like? And so I want y'all to check out her content. It is visually interesting. It keeps you engaged. It's very hard to peel away from. And then Cody, when you speak Spanish, I'm just like, let's go, Latinas, let's go.
I forgot you were Latina too.
Yes, I love that.
I loved that video about your dad. And like you were speaking on the stage about money and like the Latino, you know, sort of heritage and how hard it was. I was like, oh girl, I remember that. Yep.
Okay, good. Okay. So let's put the content hat on right now. Like when you say, I want to do a video, like what then does that talk to us about the inception process, talk down how it distills down to the team. And then let's go back to actual like practicality, like doing the dang work. Are you the one posting?
No, I don't do any of the actual posting. I don't do any of the editing. I don't do any of the graphic design. I say I want to do a video. And usually I don't say it. I'm a writer. Like my mind goes first to written format. So I'll write down, oh, this is an interesting video idea. Like how to buy a property management in 60 days. Can we do it? So I'm like, this is an interesting idea. Then I'll send it to my team and say, this is about to be a lot of work from you. Is this an awful idea? Do you like this idea? And, you know, sometimes they'll say, yeah, that's awful. Beat it. And, you know,
when you say you send it to your team, because I'm trying to avoid all of the follow-up questions. When you say you send it to your team, are you sending it to your entire creative team? Are you sending it to one person? Like, who are you sending it to?
No, it would be, so it's all done on Slack, and that would be to our YouTube team. So just an individual channel on YouTube.
Okay.
And we specialize by channel. So there's a YouTube team, there's a short form content team, which is Instagram and TikTok. There's a Twitter team, and there's a newsletter team. And then because we have two newsletters, there's actually two newsletter teams. And then we're going to launch a contrarian thinking channel as well. And so we try to be, what I found in the beginning is that I started with a ton of generalists, for number one generalist, me, right? Like I took out the trash for a year, and then I hired another generalist underneath me. And then I hired another generalist. And then at some point I was like, oh gosh, this is terrible because everybody's in each other's lanes. And it's pretty much the same in every business, but you have to start hiring pros that specialize. So I get that idea. I send it to my team. They say, yeah, that's an interesting idea. And then typically I'm a wobbler. I'm like a professional wobbler. So I'll like wobble around on the idea for a while. I'll procrastinate on it. I'll like write down some thoughts all in Notion where we keep all of these documents. And then I need like an hour or an hour and a half period where I can just really sit down at some point. Nobody talk to me, shut the door, candle on, and I'll write the sort of the entire script. And then the part that we've started to get really good at, I think, is we'll write the script. I'll get it to my team for them to think about thumbnail and title, or I might have a title and thumbnail idea and I'll send it to them and make sure they like it. So first we think, what do we want to tell people? then we think, how do we want to tell them this? That means like visually, what will it look like to tell them the story? And then we think about how do we want them to feel throughout it? And that's not necessarily 1, 2, 3, but those are three things we do in concert. And in the beginning, we focused so much on what, we didn't focus on how we were going to visually show it. And we definitely didn't focus on how we wanted you, the viewer, to feel about it. And the second we started doing that, the ones we do it for the videos become a lot better.
So going back to brass tacks, you're writing into your YouTube team and say, I have a 60-day to launch idea. They respond, yes. You close the door, light a candle, hour and a half, you script it out, you turn the script over to them, and they get into thumbnails, titles, B-roll shots, and then what happens?
Then we film one time a week because I do run these other businesses, so I don't have a ton of time for filming. So we have one day a week that sort of batch all of our content. And sometimes if we have a video we have to travel for, like the one we launched today, actually, that one might be off schedule. Maybe we have to film a different day. But one day, my videographer comes over. I have a studio set up here. We do a lot of talking head videos like this. So it'll at least start here. And then we sort of tick through all of our videos. I try now increasingly to not just be in this one sphere. I'd like to break the third barrier. I'd like to like get out in the real world, right? And so there's usually a mixture of in studio and out of studio.
This is incredible. And so then turning back, the YouTube team has theirs, the short form team. And then as far as the posting goes, somebody else will do it. Are you leading captions? Are they pulling from the script?
You know, it's a good question. So for captions for Instagram in particular, a lot of them come from this little tiny blog I have that doesn't have many readers called Tinkering. And it's a tiny little paragraph that I write once a week. And so I'd say our best written captions are usually that this is, it's almost like a public journal for some reason.
So cool.
Yeah. And they're a little bit fluffier. They're like more poetic maybe on our better days. I think they're more interesting. And so those become a lot of the captions. And then I ask our team to pull a lot of captions from the newsletters. What typically happens is I've had three people that manage Instagram for me over the last 2 years. And two of them are still with me. They just moved up to new roles and one of them didn't work out, but they all start with not getting my tone and they'll be like an LOL, OMG, high five in there and I'll die on the inside and then I'll edit it out. And then, but after about 30 days of some corrections, they'll get it and they put it inside a document that's called like Instagram best practices guide. We have one of those for all platforms. And so anytime I see something I don't like, I make it painful for them. And I'm like, I don't like this. Go to the document and tell me why I don't. And they're like, oh, right. Cause located here. Whereas if I just tell them, I don't like this, they don't really learn. They just fix the thing, but they don't have to search for why.
Oh, that's like a golden nugget. Y'all like rewind this like 30 seconds and listen to that very fact. You're going to find the reason why it didn't work because it's already been documented. Okay. So this has been a flash fire, like everything across the board, knowing about your approach, how you got started. But the biggest pullback is any business owner. The goal here would be to find a way to embrace that there is no such thing as the right question and to give yourself permission to ask questions until the right one surfaces. And then to understand that there is not a linear line of success and to embrace the process as getting you to where you want to go. In addition to that, you're going to be creating content that positions you as a thought leader so that your leads come to you instead of you going after them. And then we talked about the actual like nitty gritty content creation. Like if y'all are interested in why I believe Cody's content is popping is because it's 100% authentically Cody. So she is lighting a candle and she's doing the work. And I think that at some point we look at other people and be like, oh, everything must be done. And it's like that point of origin. What can she not sacrifice? And then empower her team along with systems and structures to actually know what she wants to put out in the world. Okay. So I want to end by one final Instagram post. Now you wrote in this post, now that we know it's probably from Tinker or, you know, from one of your epic newsletters, the only time you truly lose is when you stop trying. Failure is inevitable in the game of entrepreneurship, but we either succeed or we learn a lesson. The only way we can lose the game is by not brushing it off and trying again. Can you speak to the person who's listening right now? And they're just like, well, Cody has a lot of experience and she is well-spoken and she's smart and she's done a lot of ping-ponging and I'm just not there. I don't have that option. I am afraid to start. What would you tell that person and where they are right now?
Well, I think this time of year is pretty interesting. Lots of people setting goals. One of the things that I like to do before I set goals, it's called a Masogi. I haven't always called it that, but I found a fancy new word for it. So I'm sticking with it.
Did you write this in one of your recent newsletters?
I did.
Girl, you know, I subscribe. I done drank this tea.
Well, you're going to have to do one now.
I know. Okay, go on. Sorry. I jumped ahead. Okay, go. Sorry.
Oh, I love it. So basically the idea is that you do one thing. You do one thing for a day that is so hard that it makes the other 364 days easy by comparison, right? And what I've found is we have all these things we can do that then we start to feel guilty if we don't do them. Oh, I didn't work out today. I didn't get my cold bath today. I ate badly today. And we compounded a whole avalanche of guilt on top of us. And instead, what we remember at the end of our days, I'm pretty sure, is never the 312 days that we missed doing workouts over our cumulative lifetimes, right? We instead remember those moments of extreme difficulty where we prevailed, of extreme joy where we earned it. And so the Masogi is that idea. And my first Masogi that I did was I hiked a mountain. And when I heard of the term hike the mountain, I thought, well, I'm just going to be, you know, my little flowers. I'm going to have a coffee. It's going to be able to kind of skedaddle up this thing. No, it was like a blizzard. I had crampons on. I had an ice axe. We were falling in crevasses. It was a nightmare. We had to carry our actual fecal matter. It was literally the worst thing imaginable. I hated every moment of it. By the way, I hate the cold and I'm scared of heights. So like, I don't know what I was thinking. And so anyway, I did it. I was so pissed. I was miserable the whole time. And then I get down. And when you know, for like the next 3 or 6 months, everything's just a little easier because it's not that. And so I try to do that at least once a year. And that's what I would tell you. You don't have to go hike or climb a mountain, but do that awful workout until you almost feel like you're going to pass out or vomit. And try to insert, you know, maybe it's just once a year, maybe it's once a month, that terribly hard thing, because you'll realize you're a lot harder to kill than you think. And that probably stems a lot from my husband too, because he's a former military man. And you know, all the time I'll come with something like, this idiot said LOL OMG on my captions. And he'll be like, is anybody going to die? You know, and nobody's going to die. And so like 9 times out of 10, we're fine. But the problem is our monkey brain doesn't know the difference between lion attacking and person, you know, being late to your Zoom call, and we can't differentiate. And so we have to make the differentiation real.
So I think Mark Twain said something similar. He said, if you start your day by eating the toad, everything else is easier. So Cheers to climbing mountains and carrying fecal matter and to swallowing a toad and realizing that our reptilian brain can differentiate between being mauled by a lion and somebody being late to a Zoom call. You embody all of these principles so, so, so much. CodySanchez.com. I subscribe to your newsletter. And the crazy thing is, you know, I followed you for a while on socials, kind of like, and then I was like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to go deeper. And you generously, I was talking to you before we started rolling, and you had said that there was also a resource, even if people aren't necessarily all about newsletters, that you do have a resource for recession planning. So I'm going to drop a link. It will be in the show notes, but it's contrarianthinking.com/recession. Y'all check it out. Cody Sanchez. And you can find her on all social platforms at Cody Sanchez. You're incredible. Thank you for your contrarian brain. And thank you for sharing so valiantly and generously with everybody who's watching you create your empire. It's so inspiring.
Right back at you. I appreciate your dance moves, honestly. That's one thing.
We're really going to end there. Like, I'm going to have a heart attack watching you work out with your trainer, and you're going to have a heart attack with my booty dropping. This is great. This is just fantastic. I'm so on. This is where we're ending it. Cody Sanchez, you're freaking amazing. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jasmine.